Greetings from Podcastville, you bad motherfuckers. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by CBDLion.com. Listen, enough is enough. You can't buy CBD oil at a fucking liquor store, all right? You go down there for a bottle of whiskey, you're like, oh, CBD. No, it don't fucking work that way. There's professionals and there's fucking shitheels out there trying to sell you fucking Malukia juice and tell you it's CBD. And there you are jumping up and down. I feel fucking great. Little do you know you're drinking fucking sugar water with somebody's sperm in it. That shit ends today, all right? CBD Lion is the way to go for you. I'm telling you right now. I've been working with these guys for 6 months. I've been using that product for about 8 months. I reached out to them. Why? Because when you go to CBDLion.com, they got the third-party test results. They do everything from start to finish, whether you want to smoke it, drink it, eat a gummy, fucking CBD Lion got you covered. Go to CBD Lion right now and press in.
Church.
Bam! And get 20% off your first order. The Church would also love to welcome to the podcast ExpressVPN. You're like, Joey, what's ExpressVPN? You ready? It runs in your background of your computer or phone. Then you use the internet just like you normally would. You download the app, click to connect, and Viola, you're protected. It shields your identity. It doesn't give them no tracking location. And you're totally anonymous. Who else would come at you with something like this? Uncle Joey. Because I don't want no motherfucker to know where I am. And I don't want no motherfucker to know where you are.
I heard it's really good for international travel.
You got to keep these bitches guessing. You understand me? Now do me a favor. Find out how you can get 3 months. Listen to me. 3 months free. Gratis. At ExpressVPN.com/church. That's ExpressVPN, ExpressVPN.com/church for 3 months free when you buy a 1 year package. All right, visit ExpressVPN.com/church to learn more and to take back your privacy. You hear me? Stay black. Kick this motherfucking mule, Lee. Thursday, the motherfucking 18th of July. Light your fucking ball sack on fire. We're going deep today, bitches. A little Def Leppard, 1980. We got Rachel Wilson. We got the Christ Killer. And your Uncle Joey's here, bitches. Wasted. Oh, shit. Wasted. Wasted. What are you fucking nuts? Grab that bong head and set the herb man free. Rachel Hells Wilson, yeah. What's happened, beautiful?
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, man.
How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm high.
I know you're making strides. You're making little moves here and there. I've been watching you.
Thank you, Uncle
Joey. For the last 18 months, and you're open up on the road for Felipe. You're always hustling.
Uncle
I don't
Felipe.
See no fucking bikini shots.
You know, there's a few.
You're
there
not
are
out
a
there
few.
Selling your ass. You're out there working on your merit. And I really dig the hell out of you.
Thank
so
you
thank
so
you
much.
For coming on the show.
Highest yeah. of compliments. Thank
Tremendous.
You. Tremendous. It's an honor to be here.
You know, Doug, I watch everything. Like, oh. people are like, well, when can I come on the podcast? There's always a time and a place.
Yeah.
Let me watch for a little while. Let me see what the fuck you're doing. And, I follow you on Twitter. I see your tweets. I see your little morning thing. You're popping up. I read about your family. And that really interested me in talking to you about your family because I would die for them to adopt me.
Like, they would upstairs. Love to have you.
I would die to live with a judge, a DA, and then your sister's like a top-notch attorney. Too.
She's a prosecutor.
She's a fucking
yes.
prosecutor.
Yeah.
So breakfast at that motherfucking house
yes.
must be like laws and
no, they're interrogations.
References to fucking this. And,
it's not a breakfast.
Well, fucking Arthur B. DeMille. The fucking backhand slap motion from 1988.
Listen.
Like, that shit makes my dick up.
There's evidence. There's objections. There's literally, yeah, you know.
My mom was just a real estate attorney, but even just have her, being a kid of an attorney, can be rough. Like they're and I can't imagine having it from two sides and one being a judge.
Yeah, my mom definitely has, like, she's the cock and balls, like, for sure. There's a lot of, like, you know, intensity and, you know, strong people in my family. So
where'd she go to law school at?
She went to law school in San Diego.
And your dad?
He went to law school here in Los Angeles.
No shit. Yeah. And they met here?
They met in the courthouse in Las Vegas.
Holy shit.
Yeah. My mom was a TV news reporter and my dad was a prosecutor. And he would pass her in the hallway. And he always tells us that he would see her on TV and say that he's going to marry that woman someday.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And then she went off to law school. And I think they kind of like were dating other people. And then when she came back, I guess they met at a bar or something. And like he couldn't keep his hands off her, that dog.
Well, court in Vegas must be completely different than anywhere. Like, Vegas is a completely different place.
Vegas is an insane, like, asylum. I mean, I don't even know how I grew up there. Like, I went back last weekend. And as you get older, you know, your hometown means different things to you. And you can kind of put into perspective your childhood. And it's such a crazy place to grow up if you think about it.
Now, as you were growing up, were your parents pushing for you to go into the law field?
I think that was kind of something that was maybe like an underlying expectation. People would always, whenever I would see them out or their cohort, they would be like, oh, are you going to go to law school? You know, do you want to be a lawyer when you grow up? And I was like, absolutely not. Never.
So you knew it already.
I just knew I wasn't, that wasn't for me at all.
You got accepted into American University.
I went to college. I went to three colleges.
What was the first one?
It was a small school in Vermont called Landmark College, and it's for people who have learning disorders.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
I have ADHD, so I learn differently, which is a nice way of saying retarded, but I can say that. I have documentation, so. But yeah, I went to a school that like taught me how to learn because I just learned differently. I was always a creative person, visual, and I just never, I went to a bunch of different middle schools and high schools. I went to a lockdown when I was 17 where I graduated from in Utah. So I my schooling was never, it was all over the place.
But you're very book smart.
I am emotionally smart. I definitely have a books. If I'm interested in something, I will become obsessed with it. But you couldn't pay me enough money to ever study math ever again, ever. I could give a fuck.
Yeah. You did what you did, and then you moved the fuck on.
Yeah, like, weed taught me math. Like, the math that I needed to know, you know?
And how was American University?
It was cool for, like, you know, it was cool to be in our nation's capital. I got to see Obama get inaugurated. Like, I was a part of, you know, a huge historical moment in time. But I just felt like the dumbest person in all of my classes. I could care less about politics. I wasn't inspired by it. I thought it was kind of like Hollywood for ugly people. But I mean, no, there's whatever. But it wasn't the right place for me. And I even had the opportunity to intern for Congress. I could have, you know, gone off and done something big with that. But I just was never, it wasn't meant for me.
So you ended up in Lynn College in what part of Florida?
Boca Raton.
Okay. With all the Jews.
And, all of them.
And that's where you got your degree from.
I got my master's degree from Lynn. I stayed down there and I worked in the hospitality industry. I always worked since I was 15 in hospitality. And I worked in marketing out of college.
And you got a degree in marketing?
Yeah.
A master's?
A master's, yeah.
In marketing. Mm-hmm. No shit.
Yeah.
And then when did you start smoking reefer?
As soon as I pretty much left my parents' house when I went to college, 19, when I went to Vermont. Yeah.
That's where it's...
I mean, you have to smoke weed in Vermont. That's the place. Like, everyone is on something there.
And then when did you first decide to get on stage?
Almost 3 years ago. Yeah. When I was 29. Yeah.
What made you want to get... Because you said you...
I had tried to get on stage many years before that. I did improv as a kid. So performing was never, I was never shy of performing. I was always the first one in college who wanted to like get up and do my presentations. And I just liked being in front of people. But when I was living in Florida, I started going to improv shows. My first stand-up show was seeing Mike Epps at the Palm Beach Improv. And I saw John Lovitz, Bob Saget. Like, I had just fell in love with stand-up years ago. And then it wasn't until I was just in these, like, horrible relationships. I was working these corporate jobs out here that I just was terrible at. And I just knew that I really, one, felt purposeless. I felt like I was just kind of aimlessly roaming through life. I like, you know, it really spoke to my depression. And just, I think I was searching for that something. And it wasn't until I was getting out of a relationship. I was 29. I was living with this guy that was so toxic, and my life just wasn't what I wanted it to look like. And for some reason, just like stand up was like, it was screaming inside me. It was like, do stand up. And I had seen a friend, my friend Sam Grody, she was a sorority sister with me in DC. She does stand up. And I went to see her at the John Lovitz Club, that one that got shut down.
At Universal.
Yeah, at Universal. And I saw her perform, and I was like, I could definitely do that. And so, yeah, I ended up finally, after a breakup, I just started writing. I went to Mike's. I started getting on stage.
Are you, I don't know how to ask you this. Are you lucky at love?
Am I lucky in love? Like, at love?
Lucky at love. Do you?
I have always...
Do you attract fucking knuckleheads?
I've attracted a variety of men in my life. Some of them were men. Some of them questionable. I've always been in relationships since I was 15 years old. I've always, like, loved having boyfriends. I've dated people since I was 15. So I've had a bunch of boyfriends, I guess. I've had experience in dating guys who were all different kinds of healthy and unhealthy for me.
Now, when you broke up with that one dude, mm-hmm. and you got into stand-up, like, I did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it was all part of a metamorphosis process. Yeah. It was all part of a, I'm going to stop doing what the fuck I'm doing and get into this. Like,
right.
I got on stage in, like, June, and in October, she told me she wanted to get separated.
Oh, wow.
So I walked, like, for 4 months, I walked around like, I don't want to be with this person no more. And everything sucked.
Yeah.
Like, everything just sucked. Once I got on stage, and here I am, 28, I'm out of prison, and I'm with this woman, and God bless her. She drove me to my first open mic. She forced me, like, she forced the hand, you know. But it's really tough to explain to people. Sometimes at your, like, I got into stand-up at the lowest point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into it at a lower point in my life. And then I got all in at the lowest point in my life.
Yeah. Like,
the lower I got, the more I got into it.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt sometimes?
My first year of stand-up, I suffered, like, suicidal depression. Like, I wasn't, like, I didn't have a plan. I wouldn't actually do it, but it was in and out of my life my first year of stand-up. I got out of that relationship that I was in at 29, started stand-up. I was working for Levity at the time, and I was doing social media marketing for them. That's really, like, my path into comedy was, like, I used to work at corporate, and I ended up leaving that job because they wanted to bring someone in-house. They got Rita from the Improv, let me be a bartender in the Lab. And they don't give those jobs to, like, just anyone, let alone women. And, like, I'm not a career bartender. Like, I'm in the back looking up, you know, basic recipes for a Manhattan. You know what I mean? Like, she really believed in me. And so I was going through this breakup. She gave me an opportunity at the Improv. And I was also starting my open mics and writing and getting into stand-up. And it just became... like, I was like, this is what I'm in love with. This is what I've been missing my whole life. This is my purpose. It gave me meaning to my life in a whole new way. Oddly enough, I ended up getting into another relationship this past year. I just got out of a relationship. But he works in comedy, and I just fell in love with comedy. Like that was like my, that was my main love. And then everything else was secondary. And like, he kind of saw that process of like, my first year was rough for me. Cause I was going through kind of just like everything in my life. Like, okay, now I'm in a place where I can put meaning and like finding the funny in my pain and my trauma. And also just like, you know, I think it's a crutch for me is some of these relationships. Like I've always just maybe been afraid to be fully independent, like, which I know I can be, but like, who wants to be alone at night? You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not a random casual sex person. It just doesn't fulfill me. So I think that the more that I fell in love with stand-up, the like less, like my relationship began to deteriorate.
Like it was so weird to me how you think about the first 5 or 6 years of a stand-up. You know you're in love with something when you give up your apartment.
Yeah.
Like, you know you're in love with something. Like, you have to force your, you have to force yourself to not be home.
Yeah.
Like, I can't be home at night. Like, I don't even know what that is.
No, like, if there were nights that I would choose to, like, spend in my first years, I would have this guilty feeling like I'm cheating on my, like, my love, you know what I mean? And like, that's when I was like, okay, this is something that means so much to me. And it just like, I knew that I needed to like focus on that. And like, after being in all of these relationships that just didn't work out, like, thank God none of them wanted to marry me, you know, and they took it that far. Like, thank God it didn't work out, because I'm at a point where I was like, okay, this is what I've been missing in my life, and this is what I need to feed. You know,
you
what
like
I mean?
Kids?
Kids? Yeah, do I like kids?
Yeah, do you like kids? Do you ever see yourself having children?
Maybe one day, like when I'm older, in my 40s. Women are having kids in their 40s, so.
Yeah, my wife had it at 44.
I'd be a great pregnant 40-year-old.
But right now, comedy is
comedy. This is what I'm going to do, no matter what.
Like, it's just amazing. You know, when you look up insanity and like a dictionary is doing something over and over again with the same mm-hmm. results, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I always think about that when I dealt with comedy all those years, that people would look at you like, you're fucking insane. You're living in your car. You're delivering pizza.
Yeah.
But I was getting on stage 3 nights a week. And then afterward, I would talk comedy till 3 in the morning at a Denny's or what. We would go to a supermarket and buy cold cuts and just sit outside and talk comedy and questions and bookers, and you know, it was just endless with me.
Yeah.
Like by 94, I went home at night to read comedy biographies.
Wow.
Like that type of shit. Somebody sent me a picture today that blew my fucking mind. One of the guys that helped me out in the beginning, his name was George McKelvey. George McKelvey had been on The Tonight Show like 13 times.
Oh, wow.
He started with, you know, Johnny Carson, like mm-hmm. the 60s and shit. And George McKelvey, like when everybody hated me, George McKelvey dug the fuck out of me. Like, no, oh, he's too dirty. You know, we don't know. He's just starting out. It was just really weird that George McKelvey would call me and go, what are you doing this weekend? Come open for me.
That's so cool.
I could only get you $50 or $25. And he was just really good to me. And then there's a big time manager now in town. And I know her and she knows me. You know what I'm saying? Like, we know each other. But I know her from way back in the day when she was robbing people.
Oh, wow.
Like when she would tell people, you can't do the open mic at this club until you take my stand-up course.
Oh, wow.
So you would have to pay, like, you know,
three
bills for 8 weeks of her course before you got to be picked. They only pick 4 people a weekend.
For the open mic?
For an open mic.
How long are they doing?
15 minutes.
Okay.
So this is how retarded it was. Like,
yeah.
So if you did a class for 8 weeks and you could do 15 minutes. So they're doing a documentary on the Denver comedy scene. and they want me to do it. And when they contacted me the first time, I spoke highly about George McKelvey, and today they sent me this picture.
Oh, wow.
1969. Who's George McKelvey standing with? In his book, he credited George McKelvey. That's fucking Steve Martin.
Oh, wow.
In 1969.
He's so young.
He's a baby.
Look at him.
So George.
No gray hair. Oh, no white God. Hair.
No nothing. Look at him.
To be, he looks the same. That's pretty fucking crazy. Which one's McKelvey's the one on the
right? McKelvey's the one on the right.
Wow. And
young,
that's
young
crazy.
Steve can get it.
So fucking, I'll never forget, George McKelvey called me one Sunday night. Like, I was probably feeling sorry about myself, about to do a pound of blow. And he called me like at 6 and he goes, where are you? And I go, I'm home. Because I had a pager those days.
Yeah.
And I would have to run to the gas station to call people back. This was a fucking nightmare.
Oh, my God. I can only imagine trying to get booked back then with beepers and pagers. And
beepers?
You'd actually have to keep a calendar. Like, who walks around? How do you remember your dates?
I'll never forget a booker telling me, don't leave me a message anymore. You have to send me an email.
Wow.
On Monday, and I told her to go fuck us. Like, I'm not emailing you. I'll call you. And then, then there was another comedy scene where they would put gigs up. There was a guy who booked rooms.
Oh, wow.
And he had like 8 rooms in Nebraska. And on Monday, he would put his availability, what clubs were open that week.
Okay.
And you had like 10 seconds to.
Oh, it was like
hit
that.
Him back.
Like, yeah.
He would. Yeah, like 10 seconds.
You're like,
you
waiting.
Know how many fucking comics in that area? You had 10 seconds. It's like, it's like when you have a Southwest plane ticket.
Yeah, and you're trying to check in because you want to get A1.
A1.
Yeah, but you wait 10 seconds. You're like A60, and you're like, what the fuck?
What
like,
the
who,
fuck?
How? Whose wife? Whose wives are?
Everybody's at home like this, looking at that fucking
refresh,
second.
Refresh,
with
refresh.
The second. Right to
I
the
am
second.
That girl. I am that
right
girl.
Right to the second, you know? So it was shit like that, you know? I mean, there was just so many different.
What about fax machines? Do you ever have to fax things?
You had to fax in your availability.
Jesus.
I remember when I was first here and I was trying to make the transition from, okay, so I got into the Comedy Store, I'm working the Improv, Jamie doesn't let me work the club, but I do Latino Night, which is just as good. There was 300 people there.
Yeah.
And I fucking just was stuck. I didn't know what to do. I had like maybe 3 clubs that hired me. Then El Paso hired me as a feature act. Tribble. And I think there was somebody else that hired me. So I went and I got a bunch of numbers from people. Like at the Comedy Store, I would ask people, where you're from? And they would go, D.C. And I go, who do I call in D.C.?
Yeah.
And they gave me the number. D.C. was John X. Boston was this other guy that booked Club 56. And every Monday. Fucking 9 a.m. Even if I snorted coke till 7:45.
You were out here.
At 6 a.m. I would start. So they would have the fax at 9 a.m. And I would fax. What you would do is put, like, you know, fucking Wolfie, and then put the whole month of January. And then, you know, you would put a calendar and then give them your dates and what was open. But for you to fucking get booked, you had to lie about a date on there.
Oh, yeah. To make
like, I can't
sure.
do
so
it
you,
this week. I'm too busy already.
You're, exactly. You
no,
don't want to see.
You have to see that you're working on the club.
Right.
If you send them an empty calendar, you get who got. So you
That's
had to make
right.
sure he didn't know who that club was or call and
right.
say, Wilson's working that week in June. What do you
yeah.
think of her? And if he, you know what I'm saying? So
it's like your mom catching you at, not at your girlfriend's house. You were out
yeah,
somewhere
so
else.
So you had to call and make up. So I took a job selling nuts and screws.
Oh, wow.
On Ivar between Hollywood Boulevard.
I live right down there.
And what's the one on top of Hollywood?
Not Sun Franklin?
Franklin.
Yeah.
So where the pizza place is?
Franklin and Ivar?
Yeah, Franklin and Ivar, right across the street, there's a pizza place.
Okay.
A well-known pizza place.
Joe's Pizza?
I don't know how it does now. It used to be good when the guy
Not Joe's Pizza, right?
No, it's... but Joe's Pizza is maybe a block away.
Right, right, right.
2 blocks away if I'm headed west.
Okay.
So there was a place in there that I had to be there at 4.
In the morning? Oh.
Because you have to sell contractors.
Okay.
On the East Coast.
Nuts and screws?
Nuts and screws when they get to fucking work. So I would just snort coke till 3.
Hells yeah.
The store would close at 2. I would keep my car in the back of the store and just pop the seat back and lay back. I would do a couple lines of coke, bang one out, and then fucking head over to Ivar and sell screws, catch the 7 o'clock thing. But at about 6, I'd start fucking faxing motherfuckers. I didn't have a fax machine.
Where are you out finding fax machines?
I was a homeless fucking guy. I was a homeless
he's doing family. It from work, he's saying.
So I got a job just to have a fax. So I would make money from 7, from 4 a.m. to 6.
You guys think I'm here? I'm just here to use your fax machine.
That was basically
dope.
It. I went there to make money. I was making like 8 bills a week selling nuts and screws.
Yeah, you know, that's smart though.
It was, and I would leave a fucking, like they would say, after you make $100 minimum, you go home.
Yeah.
I would make fucking 200 by 6 and start faxing at 6 a.m. I would fax every club owner. I'd have a notebook with fucking dates written across it for checks. And what the result was, you have to. You're a businessman.
Yeah.
You're a CEO.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't want to call the guy and go, hey, Rachel, hi, Joe Diaz. I want to know if I could work your club. And she's like, you just called me last Monday. Yeah. What did I tell you? So you have to keep records.
Right.
So I had a notebook just even then, just for who I contacted, what bullshit story I told them. In those days, they would say, send the tape. No tape.
Wow.
No tape. You're not getting shit.
It's a different, it's just different.
Completely different. Yeah. Now.
Most people wouldn't even, because I bet you half of us wouldn't even be around if it was like that.
No.
No one would even.
That was.
They can't even tie their shoes. Some of these people.
No, it was a different.
They don't
game.
Even shower before they hit the mic. You know what I mean?
It was a different game. You had a. It was a day job.
You think some of these people are going to keep an organizational notebook?
You had a real 4-hour day job every day. On top of your writing, you had to stay on time, and then you had to, and then you sent those, and don't think you got work. Like I didn't say nothing about getting work, did I?
Nope.
That was endless. That was endless. That was endless. And then once in a while, a number would come up on your pager. And it would be like Yoder's booker. Mark Connell was his name. And he would go, hey, Mark, whatever. Joe Diaz, yeah. So you're in Michigan. And, you know, like I would put like Joe's Comedy Club.
Yeah.
And he would go, you're going to be in Michigan that week? Yeah. All right, give me the name of 3 headliners that you've worked with. And let me call around and I'll see if I can put you
for
in
references.
And then something. You wouldn't get it.
Yeah. Damn.
And then you wouldn't get it because that's it. What?
They wouldn't vouch for you?
Like, no. You know, now he has to get a hold of him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And all that shit. And he forgot. So now you'd have to call him and say, hey, what about that week in Detroit? And he'd go, okay, you know, I need you Thursday, Friday. It's one night. And he would put you on a string of one-nighters. I still remember going from like, fucking Niles, like Ishpeming, like the bottom of Michigan, all the way to the fucking top. Like, no, Niles is on the bottom and Ishpeming is on top. Traverse City, like, you would stop. It would be like 5 hours a day of driving. You know, like 5 hours here, then 5 hours there, then you went here. So it was like a fucking adventure.
Damn.
But that's how it was. Like, it took, and then I would bother Rachel for a year. Rachel, Joe Diaz, nothing. I'll call you when I have something.
Yep.
Send me a tape. Who do you work with? Give me the name and 3 references. And right about when you're about to give up, Felipe walks up to you and goes, hey, fool, what are you doing next week? Do you want to go to the Jacksonville Improv? And you're like, I've been bugging them for a fucking year. Like, I've been bugging them for a year. They keep telling me no, and now you make one phone call, and I'm featuring. I got my own hotel room. I don't have to sleep on the floor. No, you don't have to sleep on the floor. I don't have to sleep on the couch. No, you don't have to sleep on the couch.
Wow.
You're like blown the fuck away. That's the angle. Like, there used to be a Catch a Rising Star in Vegas. You're too young for that one.
What is that one?
That was in the Excalibur. You're too young for that
Wait, but I was.
You were a young girl.
Huh? Yeah, I was alive.
No, you were alive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a club?
It was in New York or Vegas, right?
The hotel was the Excalibur.
Yeah.
And it had, like, a sword theme.
Yeah. It's still alive. I mean, it's still there.
Is it still there?
What, yeah, the Excalibur is still there.
It's still there, the Excalibur? Yeah. Upstairs was Catch a Rising Star.
Okay.
For a fucking year and a half.
It's a club?
It a comedy club. Club. It used
Damn,
to be a chain.
They should still have it.
It used to be a chain.
Okay.
It was in this. See if the one in Jersey is still open.
Wow.
It was Jersey, like in fucking.
Of course, it Princeton. Was New Jersey and Vegas.
Princeton? No. Princeton? Vegas? And Reno. What, the Laugh Factory Reno?
Yeah. Oh, was Catch okay. a Rising Star. That's why Star. I was like, I've heard of this
yes.
brand before.
Catch a Rising Star was yeah. in Reno. And that was. That was
wow.
It was a fuck. That was a great.
How club. Was that room at the Excalibur, the Catch a Rising Star room?
It was one of, before you were saying that you worked.
Yeah.
A week with Dom or whatever. Now yeah. I was in love with comedy at this point. I had been doing comedy, I say roughly 10 years. I had opened up for Rogan, Mencia. I had opened up for Paul Rodriguez. I had opened up for people, and I got a week. With all the bullshit, I tortured Catch a Rising Star for a fucking year and a half. And I call that motherfucker every Monday yeah. at 9:01. You know my shit.
Oh, yeah.
My shit is the real deal. On Sunday nights, I would get home and send headshots to casting people. Every Monday was my headshot day, so they would get them on Wednesday. And I would send tickets to the Comedy Store, free passes to the Comedy Store, and the Improv.
That's cool.
This is what I... And I remember going in for an audition for Sheila Jaffe one time. And I ate a bag of dicks. Aww. Like, I ate a bag of... Like, I went in there all gung-ho. With like a robe on. It was like a boxing coach and shit. And I just ate a bag of dicks. And she goes, thank you for coming in. And the assistant goes... and Sheila Jaffe looks at me. She goes, oh, yeah, hold on. I have something for you. She gave me back a stack of headshots.
Oh.
I mean, 30 headshots with resumes, tons of free passes from the Comedy Store.
She gave it to you back?
Yeah. She's like, I don't need this.
What a bitch.
No, no. She ended up booking me.
Okay, perfect.
Shit.
We love her.
Great years okay, later.
I was like, no.
It's just that was the job.
Yeah.
That's how much the job entailed.
Yeah.
Now all
no,
you got to do
she's
is.
She's not a bitch.
Now all you got to do
still
is.
She's alive.
Yeah. Now all you have to do is click a button on your computer.
Oh, wow.
But every Monday, I
yeah,
would wake up.
Yeah, it's so
up,
different.
I would wake up and mail shit. Tuesday was drop-off shit. So every day I had a different job.
Right. So now Monday it's just you can just email 50 people in
remember,
one.
Remember, before 9/11, you could walk into the studios.
Oh.
Okay.
It was like that?
I could walk into.
Before 9/11? They took studio before access
nine,
too.
Before 9/11, I'd go to Fox, to the gate, and go, I want to drop off a package for Rachel Wolfson.
Wow.
And they'd go, just park over there and make it quick. He would
do
park.
They make you take off your shoes?
No, no. This was like it was very open Fox. So yeah. I could go to Fox and go, I want to drop off a package for Christian Kaplan. They would go, park there, run upstairs, don't take more than 3 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And you could run up, drop the package off, see the assistant. The assistant would look at you because they're looking for a person like you.
Right.
You just don't have an agent or your agent's a schmuck. I would drop off my own shit on Tuesday. So Tuesday was drop off day. That agent you want to sign with, that he won't sign you, every Tuesday he got a new package at his door. It was.
They couldn't get rid of you.
No, it was $29 for 100 headshots. I'm coming all
wow.
day long. I'm coming all day long. I would buy 300 at one shot and go through every 10 days. You
That's
know?
Amazing.
And then when I got the agent, I'd show up every other week with 20 more headshots
yeah.
and resumes. Hey, don't forget me. Hey, don't forget me.
I love that relentlessness.
It's that's this what this all is about.
Yeah.
This is that love that you have.
Yeah.
That's what mm-hmm. and
you're not nobody, going anywhere.
This is, you don't read this in a book.
No.
You don't read this in a mm-hmm. book. No book's gonna teach you this. This is, you know, what I there was a kid here, Corey Miller, got $2.5 million deals, real good looking black dude. Very funny. He went back to Atlanta to raise his kids because his show didn't get picked up. But he had this thing, Mondays he would write poetry. He wasn't a poet. He wasn't no poet, but that was part of his exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday he would write comedy. Wednesday he would write a script about underwater fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Thursday he would write fucking comedy. And Friday he would write music. He wasn't a musician. But he said he wanted to explore all the different things
wow.
to make his mind go to all these different places. That's the level
I love that.
Oh, shit, that, you know, when I hooked up with your boy, Felipe, you know, I would meet, we used to have our own acting class.
Yeah.
Me, Felipe, Silent Bob, Sebastian, Satina, we would give ourselves our own homework assignments.
Yeah.
We said, fuck paying $300, and we critique each other. Ask them.
That's smart.
Ask them.
I will.
Ask them.
Yeah.
And then we go from there and go to a weed store and fucking stock up on edibles. The guy was a baker at a Beverly Hills place, and he quit his job baking to open up a weed store, and he would bake edibles. So not like regular, like edibles.
Yeah, gourmet shit. Edibles
that you would get 100 pounds.
Right.
Like, you know, victory fudge with 3-layer almonds, and you'd eat pop one of them. But next time, when are you going to see them again? When are you opening for him?
August in
the Ask second. Rodrigo. You ever, see a person
I love Rodrigo.
You ever see a person get knocked out and have to get carried to a car?
That's what happened?
And his legs got a drag on the floor.
No way.
Bro, they had Rodrigo, one guy on each arm, and they were walking him into a car. One morning in acting class, we started popping edibles and shit.
That's oh, my God.
That's when they were Rice Krispie treats.
Oh, man.
And coconut chiffon cake. This guy would make a coconut 3-fucking-layer cake with coconut in the
Put
middle.
Him out.
With THC and that shit, and he didn't know. You go to his house, and he'd just be squeezing
That's
like
amazing.
This green shit. Or the coconut cake was green, for starters. You thought it was St. Patty's Day.
Oh my God!
It was always St. Patrick's
Day. His chocolate was green. You know what I'm saying? Everything he had was fucking green.
That is amazing. And he can. And Rodrigo smokes heavy weed, so I can only imagine.
We're going. We're talking 2000.
This is back in the day. We were on guinea pigs with the. With the edibles.
2004, this is when Felipe had Wednesday night at El Coyote's.
Oh, wow. I love that place.
Have you been there?
Of course.
They still do comedy there?
Uh-uh. I eat there.
Oh, you been there to eat?
Yeah, I love that place.
No, not
El Coyote. Oh, you're thinking, is this a different place?
I'm talking about fucking in the hood, Jerry.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm talking about a different place. I'm like El Coyote on Sunset.
I'm talking about a place where they changed the name 4 times in 1 year.
Oh, my God.
Because it was a drug bar.
Really?
Shit.
Wait, was it a, it was just a bar?
And Felipe dated the twins, fool.
Oh, shit.
I want to fuck the sister and tell her I don't know which one it was.
Stop. That's amazing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they had. So they
Felipe.
Give you.
Wait, they change the name 4 times a year?
Every 4 times a year.
A new paint job.
Did the twins ever find out about each other?
The twins worked there together. Hot. Both of them were 12s.
Wow.
Banging. Every Mexican chick that worked in there had to be a fucking 12.
Hell
You're
yeah.
not going to find any of those bitches in the detention center. That's where they would pull them out of, right to the detention center. They would go down and go, you,
oh
get
God.
Those 4 barefoot ones. They're on fire. And they'd take them at the El Coyote, and Wednesday nights was comedy night.
That's amazing.
You got $40 in a burrito.
Oh, that's
Or
amazing.
A smothered
that's
burrito.
A good deal.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You wouldn't eat all day. Like, you were that broke. That you were sweating that burrito. Sweating.
Is this place still open? I'm trying to go.
It's open. It's under a different name now.
Oh, of course it's under a different name.
But I mean,
it's 40th name.
You know, I could tell you, if I tell you the names today that have been there as open micers, like, just like feature acts, you would fucking die.
That's so funny.
Well, what about that thing you posted, I think it was a day or two ago, on Twitter, that schedule at the Laugh Stop? That was pretty crazy.
Oh, my God.
Just like, it was you, Tom Rhodes, Rogan, Fitzsimmons, and a couple. It was like big
and that's
names.
That's got to be 2001, 2002.
That's pretty crazy.
Damn.
It's such a fucking journey, guys.
It must be pretty, like, I can't, whenever I see stuff like that, I'm like, what if I see Rachel in 20 years and we were on the 4th wall list together? Like,
yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I see pictures of people of you guys from the past, and it's like, wow, this is a moment in time and like
Josh
history.
Josh Wolf posted one a year ago.
Yeah,
of an open mic list, me, him, Darren Carter. And
oh, I think I remember
was Dave
that.
Chappelle.
Yeah, that's
like,
insane.
You know, like you know, this is Dave Chappelle before.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle, you know.
I'm not good at saving stuff like that. I don't.
You got to.
I never.
Do
I
you
don't,
save set lists?
No, I don't really say.
None of it.
I take pictures occasionally, but. Very. That was never something that I just don't even think about it. But
I got a folder in my comedy store set list.
Yeah.
A folder at the bottom of my drawer. On one side it's set list, and the other side is call sheets.
Wow.
All the big call sheets and the little miniature ones they put in your fucking green room.
Wow. Yeah, you gotta save those. I mean, you don't have to.
No, it would be cool. Memories. It's like it's your own little museum.
I have my like comedy notebooks like that I've already like I'm saving them. Like it's an honor to like fill another. You know
wait,
what I mean?
Wait till you look at them.
Yeah.
10 years.
They're gonna
from
be like,
now.
What an insane person.
Wait till you look at them 10 years from now, and you go, the thought that I did this material in Montreal for a showcase.
Like in front of all the biggest agents.
Yeah, like this is ever. The material I chose to do.
How embarrassing.
The biggest night of my life, because you'll still have that set, yeah. The set list. Like you'll have your diary for the day, and yeah. Then that night before you go out, you'll have like the set list before, you know, APA. APA was huge when I got there. They gave me a showcase one night. I found its set list about 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to run into a wall head first.
No.
I swear to God, I wanted to run into a wall head first. Like, the topics were just horrendous. Like, I remember, like, a topic and a joke. Just horrendous. Like, you look at that shit and go.
I'm going to be regretting. There's going to come a day where I'm going to regret all the eating ass material I've done. Yeah.
Home when you have a little.
Not the eating ass. The material.
Right.
Listen, man, you.
No, it's a part of my life.
You say it, you know, you say it on stage. You know, that's why comedy makes you so vulnerable.
Yeah.
You say this shit and you don't look back. And guess what? When I wasn't saying this shit, I didn't have a career.
Yeah.
So when I was talking about all that goofy shit the first 10 years of comedy, and I thought I was making strides, but I was a regular at the store. I was a regular at the Improv. You were just a guy cracking jokes. Okay? You were just a moron that got good at cracking rehearsed jokes.
Right.
It's not till you go into that second layer of the epidermal and start saying, let me tell you what I did, and then bring it to life with a joke and make them screech a little first.
Right.
And then go, oh, we didn't know you were going there.
Yeah.
You know, this the first 10 years, you're just doing knock-knock jokes.
Yeah.
You're just a fucking wedding photographer. You know what I'm saying?
You're a bar mitzvah DJ.
Yeah, you're a bar mitzvah DJ, you know?
It's pretty cool. Like, I did a show with Jesus Trejo last night. And I like, even if I last night wasn't my best set, but even seeing people do well, but then seeing someone like him, there's just a different level of laughter, and the laughter is more consistent, and it's like seeing like a superhero. Like it's pretty crazy to see someone who's doing what you want to do and doing it at like such a higher level.
It's
like,
so inspiring.
Shit. Yeah,
you never want to be the best. Like for me, I don't ever want to be the best comic in the room.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I want.
Well, you do, but you don't.
Yeah, but like I always hope that there's someone around that I can learn something from.
Right.
You know, not even if it's not the you know whatever.
I mean, like we said on Monday's podcast, I remember years ago watching Rogan at the Union. At the Union, it was a bar next to, across the street from Miyagi, which nobody knows what I'm talking about right now. It's across the street.
It's changed the name 3 times.
Yeah, it's the Pink Taco.
Oh, okay.
The Pink Taco.
Yeah,
on Sunset.
Yeah.
Across the street, if you go 30 yards, I forget what it is now, it was the Union. And I had been working with Joe for about 3 years at the time, and I saw him have great sets at the store. But that night, he was on pinpoint. And every young comic in the room from, I mean, I can't even, Nick DiPaolo was there that night. Like, everybody looked at him. And except for maybe Nick DiPaolo and a couple other guys that were in the room, higher level guys, all that whole core I was with, like, I wasn't jealous of Joe, but I knew that if I did the work, that was going to be me in 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, that's all. Like,
yeah.
There was no, like, it was like, wow, and then boom. Sometimes you catch performances that'll doubt you.
Right.
That you go home and go, it's time to get on ZipRecruiter. I'll never get that good.
Oh,
the first time I saw Stanhope in 96, like I knew Doug, but I worked with Doug in 92 and 91 and 96. He was a complete different animal that I went. Like, I had a gig that Saturday. I saw him on a Friday, and that Saturday I canceled.
Wow.
Like, that's how shocking and how good, precise timing.
Yeah.
Free was the word.
Right.
I didn't understand that you had to be free. He was free. was out of the cage. There was no holes barred. It was Stanhope fucking coming at you. People walking, people grabbing their purses and paying their bills, and he's yelling at them as they're walking out, go fuck yourself, where you going? I got an abortion joke you gotta hear. You know, like just tormenting them as they walked out. And you're sitting there going, I just want people to sit and laugh.
Yeah.
What point are you happy that people walk out?
Yeah.
He had flipped it around. There was another comic in Seattle that was his thing, to go on stage and grow. There was two of them, a girl and a guy that... we're going to make them walk. Well, you won the war, but you lost the battle.
Right.
Stanhope was doing it a little differently. Stanhope was winning the war and the battle because as he was throwing you out, people were laughing that he was throwing you out. Well, wait, you're not going to hear my tit fuck joke. Don't go nowhere yet.
Right.
And the woman would be, I've never, you know, like it was fucking nuts. Like, what, you know, and then I heard what he was doing down here, that he would do sets at the Improv and just disrupt the show. Like, the show would be fucking disrupted. Like, all these neat comics would go up with their notebooks and their fucking swarmy shit, and they would get nothing because what they had just seen was so surreal. The first time I saw Stanhope, I cracked. But then the second type of performance I saw was Rogan at the Union, and I go, wait a second. 2 years ago, I was fucking delivering pizza, delivering Chinese food. Now I'm close with this guy and I'm able to see this. So that means I'm making progress.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you're making progress. I know that that'll be me in 8 years.
Yeah.
If I get on stage every fucking day.
Exactly.
And when you're at that point and you say, I'm getting on stage every day, you fucking mean it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking about, hi. This is Mom. I'm coming to visit you. And you're like, I hope not, because I got a weekend up in Fresno this week. I mean, it gets to that point.
Yeah.
When you're like, Mom, I don't have
I had to leave my best friend's wedding.
Yeah. No.
I was in Vegas.
That's the discipline.
I went. My best friend is the one wedding I wanted to actually be at. I got to be there for an hour.
That's the discipline.
I saw them smooch. I saw them. I ate a plate of food. I took the food. And I dipped. I wanted to be there more than anything, but I was like, I want to be on stage more than anything else, you know? But this is what I really want. And
when,
I get
when it. When it first clicks, the discipline becomes intense.
Yeah.
The discipline that you have to put on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like the word vacation disappears.
Yeah.
The word day off disappears. The word wedding disappears. Like there's so many things that just disappear.
Mm-hmm. Relationships.
Like relationships disappear. If you really want to do what you want to do,
mm-hmm.
that person will leave on their own.
Yeah.
Because they know they can't compete.
Mm-hmm.
I can't compete.
Yeah.
Guess what? My friends and I are having this thing Saturday night. And you're like, unless we do it at 11.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you mean? And but you can't be doing comedy. It has to be that one night off when you do comedy. Stores open 365 days a week. What does that tell you? But yesterday you did comics and you did the pizza place and you were so funny. That was yesterday. I got to earn my stripes today.
Yeah.
And you get this weird discipline to you. And I mean, I got to the point, and you get Josh Wolf. Next time you go up there, you go, Josh, all those years where you were having parties in L.A., did Joe Diaz ever show? Not once. And he was pretty much my roommate.
Yeah.
I always had a spot to do. I don't know what you're talking about. There was a girl who broke up with me because she was into that shit. You know, my brothers are coming out to visit me. Got nothing to do with me.
Nope.
That's got none. That's your brothers.
Mm-hmm.
No, I ain't got no brothers. My sister's in Cuba. And if that bitch comes over, she's going to get the same treatment.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's why I love people who date comics and they're not in the business. Mm-hmm. See, as comedians, you can't be with another comic.
Why?
Because it's not going to work.
How do you know?
I've been here for 22 years.
But if there are people, there are comics who do, it does work out.
Why take the chance?
Okay.
Why take the chance? Why take the chance?
What
because
do you?
Because what happens? What happens if you start dating Lee today? Okay. You and Lee fall in love. And
okay.
You move in together.
Okay.
And now you start booking gigs.
Okay.
You got to take this more to deal with you? No. So the first 6 months, it'll be fun. You take this more to deal with you. After that, obviously, you want to be on yourself on the weekends. You want to go do your own three things. Guess who's going to get mad? Boom. What happens?
Are you going to get mad, Lee?
What happens if you date this fucking Mortadel?
We're both Mortadels.
And you both showcase for Montreal.
Right.
But you get picked. How are you going to tell her you got picked and us fucking ass is going to stay home?
Oh,
guess
whatever.
What she's going to want to do? Well, I'll just come with you. I don't want... You can't come with me.
You weren't
invited.
I don't even think that, like... For me, I feel like it could work if...
No.
It couldn't?
It's not going to work.
Well, see, like...
It's never going to work.
I even noticed a little bit of what you're talking about.
It's never going
to
work.
With just friends. Just, like, comedy friends wanting to come to gigs and...
No, I don't know.
I just...
Stand up as you in a wall on the microphone. If you want to join the band, join the Beatles. You know, go do Reunite with fucking... SWV or something. Be the white chick. That's the bad mistake that, you know, you don't
want to... So who do you date if you're a comic?
Non-comics.
You date non-comics.
Non-comics.
But then you have to train them from...
What about Natasha and Moshe?
There's a couple.
That's one
in a million.
What
about Tom Segura and
like I said, there's
Christina.
There's one in a million, but the percentages...
What about Rich Voss and Bonnie McFarlane?
The percentages are very low.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying.
What about the agent from ICM and that other chick? Where's her career today? What about Ralphie and
totally.
Lana?
Listen,
I agree with you
for the most
First
part.
First off, number two, both all three of those women you named are very, 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 very comfortable. In one, their sexuality, and two, and in their skin.
Okay.
Those three women are not needy. Tom Segura will kick. Tom Segura's wife will bitch slap you quicker than I'll slap you.
Oh, yeah.
Bonnie McFarlane will hit you in the fucking head with a shovel quicker than whatever. And the other crazy bitch you talked about. Who else?
Natasha.
Natasha Leggero. Listen,
I get it. I come from a strong-ass woman myself.
Well, let me ask you this. How many comics did Natasha Leggero date before she settled down Moshe Kasher?
Probably a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now you got 20 morons. But every time you walk into a club, they look at her with Lisa. I used to fuck her up the ass and put it in her mouth.
Wow.
Okay? You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree with you. Like, I think for the most part, I would never... Listen, I don't think people should shit where they eat. I'm very much against that. Right. However, I think in those cases, those are the cases where I'm like, I do like seeing those people together because they're perfect for each other, because they are comfortable with exactly who they both are and there's no competition. But I don't think every comic should be out here dating comics.
And if you are dating a comic... Like on the third date, once you decide to move in with Lee, you got to set your rules.
Yeah, boundaries.
You got to set your rules.
Yeah.
Same thing what happens when you date a civilian.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you something, my friend.
Sometimes they just don't get it.
I love you to death. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. I want to marry you, Rachel. We get married. What does Joey do? Joey's a successful contractor. He makes six figures a year.
Yeah.
He's very comfortable in who he is. We start humping, fucking, all of a sudden you spit out a little fucking woofie. And you know what? I'm not the fucking nanny type.
Yeah.
So you're going to go on the road with Dave Chappelle and Joe Rogan, mm-hmm. and I'm going to stay at home and watch the kid.
Mr. Nanny.
You got a better chance of fucking dying. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, it's just... I like women who meet. I love dumb bitches who hook up with comics.
Oh, you like watching it?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I've seen that one 300,000 times.
Oh, man.
I feel like you don't watch reality TV.
I feel like those are horror stories.
I watch reality TV. I watch life.
Yeah.
Okay, I watch life and use people as guinea pigs in my own little private show.
I would pay to watch this show. I would subscribe.
I'll look at you and Lee, and I'll say, how long is this going to last? And I'll be happy if you guys do last, but I'll have doubts about different things. I'll just watch it.
Yeah.
I won't butt in. I'll just give
it
rope.
Honestly, Lee, if you got into Montreal, I would, and I didn't, it would make me so happy because in my mind, we got into Montreal. Okay.
Well, now she's going to tag along.
No. I have a gig that weekend, so you go off and do Montreal. I'm going to be over here doing my gig. And also, if Lee's been doing it a lot longer than I have. So for me, in that sense, I got to respect that. You know what I mean? Like,
but
I'm
you
not,
won't.
See, I see what you're saying, but even but me, myself, I'm, yeah. I can be won't. A jealous person. I can, no, see, I can see myself being
I date you, that means now I got to take you on the road with me.
Not always.
We're not married to be on the fucking road together, too. Or how what about, are we, Donnie and fucking Marie?
How about, like, who books that show?
Sonny and Cher.
Send me, give me that booker's number. Like,
that, I'm not that's like
a,
that.
You're I not, get, but I think a lot of people are.
A lot of people.
My first year of comedy was very much as it was getting on stage and, like, writing and learning that. And whatever, it was also the mental side of it and having to deal with those emotions of jealousy and worrying about what other people are doing. And really, I got to a place in my comedy where I'm like, okay, I am confident that, like, in my material and who I am and, like, my, like, that I know that I'm funny and that I'm in this journey. This is a journey for me. It's not like a rush. I'm not, everything that I've gotten has come to me at the right time and when I've felt like I deserved it. I'm not one out here like begging for spots. If I don't have a spot, I'm at mics. I'm writing every day. I'm getting better as a comic. And I feel like I've had to come to terms with that even with friends, because a lot of my friends were getting stuff, you know, and I was watching that in the first year of comedy. But you know what? I started to get stuff and it didn't stop. I started to get a lot of stuff and I started to, and I was like, their success was my motivation. You know what I mean? And I'm not ever coming from a place of jealousy. I always come from a place of gratefulness and gratitude that I'm even just here. So, like, I think it takes the right kind of people, one, to be in comedy, and two, to date comics, two comics. It's never, I don't, but it's, comedy is not for everyone, and dating comics is not for everyone, nor should it be recommended to everyone.
When you say dated, I fucked around with maybe four comics, and I part-time dated one comic.
Were any of them enjoyable for you?
It got uncomfortable.
At what point?
Once you put it in their ass. No. I shouldn't say that. I didn't get to that part. You would take somebody home. They're a good piece of ass. You're having a good time. But then they do one little thing and it blows off the fucking whole night. If they would have done it on the third night, it wouldn't have bothered you as much as the first night.
Okay.
Like, the four comic chicks I slept with were all looking for something.
What do you mean?
They were looking for help at some
point. Oh, I see. Like, from you for their careers? Oh, so they're intent.
And at that part of my career, remember, this is when I was at the store.
Right.
This is girls that would see me at the store.
Right.
And go,
you didn't think they loved you for you?
No. This is L.A. Okay? Nobody loves you for you.
Aww.
No, I'm being cynical. I'm not saying that. Look, I've been married, met her, and everything worked out. One girl I kind of, I dated her. I really liked her.
Yeah.
And I kept it as detailed as I could.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't think about 6 weeks on the road without her sucking my dick. So I brought her with me because she was that much fun. Like, you know, we did coke together. I could tie her up.
So it was a blast.
I could light her asshole on pussy on those nights, on those off nights.
Yeah.
Instead of paying for the hotel room myself, I'm sharing it with another comic. And that's what I didn't like.
Oh, you didn't like that?
No, when I got back from that, I was done.
Oh, okay.
I still liked her and I still messed around with her, but our road work was done.
Wow.
Did you run into anything with, because you met your wife when she was working at the store. Not, she wasn't a comic, but was there any weirdness there with her being at your work, or with her knowing, with other comics knowing that you worked there? They were pretty cool.
I kept it under a hat for a year.
Can I tell you something? My parents are a rare example of people who work together
that could stay. Yeah,
ran a business together and have a successful marriage together. And this is not recommended either for these people to be dating.
But
those, you know what I mean?
And each of us, As a comedian?
No, but they were politicians. And let me tell you, there is just as much competition to see your significant other.
I get the competition part. As comics, not everybody chooses his career.
True.
For a reason. So there's a little bit of, with a comedian, there's a little bit of, we're not completely on our game.
Okay.
You follow what I'm saying to you? We're not completely on our game. After I was 30, I learned that, like where you are right now. Now you start learning more about your relationships and where you are. So I learned one thing. You know what? Rachel's fucking beautiful. But I can't date Rachel. You know why? Because
she's psycho.
Because she's a fucking pothead like me. And that means every fucking day, me and Rachel are going to smoke a pound of fucking weed and we're going to go into debt together.
No, we're not. No, because we're not. I'm going to be up working out.
But I'm wrong about that.
Catching that money.
But if you're an alcoholic and I'm a cocaine head,
that's it never going to work.
But if you're a cocaine head and I'm a cocaine head, it's not going to work.
Okay.
Like after I was 30, I started figuring that out in relationships.
So you got to just find someone who does compatible drugs.
There's a yin and a yang. You know, it's a yin and a yang. I feel like Rick Messina when he told that girl that comedy doesn't work if you're over 28. I should have never said that. Just in the years I've been here, I saw a lot more people break up comics than a lot more stay together.
Yeah.
I saw a lot. I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
You know, when you're doing comedy 4 or 5 years and you're into it, like a girl like you, you're dealing with comedians 7 nights a week. Mm-hmm. I bump into you, we go to Denny's, we go back to your house, you smoke a joint, you come out with pajamas on, something happens.
Why are you letting my secrets out, and Joe
now
Coco?
And now we date little by little and we try. It's happened 1,000 times, you know? But it ends kind of weird. And now I got this, like Mitzi Shaw. Let's say you and I dated and we were both at the store. If we broke up after 2 years and Mitzi found out, now she would make you follow me.
Oh my God.
Every night. And I would make or me follow you every night. So she would
make force you guys have to work together.
She would make
no
you
weirdness.
No. There's difference between working together. If you're the MC and I'm the headliner.
Or like.
But when you got to bring me up and shake my hand, even though you left me for Lee.
Oh God.
Okay? You left me.
This triangle.
For Lee.
Literally.
So. Now I gotta go follow you, even though I want to spit in your face, or I left you for your sister.
Dang.
Would you want to bring me up without wanting to spit in my fucking face? That's a complete different emotion she would tap into.
That's probably great for the stage, though.
Oh.
So inspiring.
You know, because what, are you not gonna shake my hand?
Yeah, no, I You're definitely would shake your hand.
Are you gonna go up on stage and say, this next guy coming to the stage, fuck my sister, stole my car and cheated on me and gave me fucking chlamydia after he fucked my sister, the other chlamydic.
And we're getting married next week. Thank you so much.
That would actually be kind of funny.
Would you say that? No, you have to say, this next guy I love, I've seen him on HBO and I've seen him on Showtime and Comedy Central. He's one of my all-time favorites. Keep it going. And you got to say this while your heart's breaking because he's going home to your sister.
Oh my God.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That builds. That's called the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
The discipline.
Yeah. I'm ready for
this
it.
This is Lee.
Are you ready to fuck my sister and bring me up on stage?
Sure. This is just like the Japs did. You know, there's a discipline. There's a discipline. Remember when the Japs, when you fucked up, what do? You got to go get a sword and fuck us out.
Harikari.
It's a discipline.
Harikari.
You fuck up, you cut your thumb off.
Yep.
We're not cutting thumbs off in here, nothing. But you have to run the CEO of your comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a discipline. I don't give a fuck if the period is gushing out of my pussy. I got a 15-minute spot at the store. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
these are all the things that, you know, I don't care if I'm sick. You know, they just, when you get into that love of it, there's just this discipline that's like.
But I feel like it kind of is like Harikari, just in the way, like, if you go on stage and have a bad, like, it feels like you're stabbing yourself. And you kind of, like, I feel like maybe the point of Harikari is so you learn from it. And hopefully you learn from, you make, like, you're like, I'm not going to make that mistake again on stage. In some way, I think it's similar.
No, you make that mistake again and again to see if it was even a mistake. Okay.
That was deep.
Oh, okay. I never thought about that.
You make the mistake again on stage to see if it was even a mistake. Maybe there was just an audience that was deaf and you didn't get the memo.
Right.
You know, maybe there was an audience that doesn't like fucking sucking and fucking. You didn't get the memo, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry you're turning your podcast into a comedy class.
Oh, no, I'm learning so much.
I really wanted to get to learn about you because you're so interesting.
Oh, thank you.
So who do you write for now? I know you write. Do you write?
I've written for publications. I've written for High Times, Mary Jane, Vice, Playboy. Right now I just work and do marketing during the day for the weed industry and comedy at night.
And when you say weed industry, who do you...
Who
signs your paycheck?
Budfeed, Kush Queen. I shoot for a bunch of brands. I do social media marketing. So I get a lot of work in the weed industry.
It's just you smoking, talking about that product.
Well, I do shoots. I am part of a YouTube channel where we film videos. We have like 70,000 subscribers, all about weed, kind of from an educational base standpoint with a little bit of humor. And then I write for publications. I do social media marketing for brands and companies. I run ads on my account.
You're pretty much making a living off the weed company.
Fully a living. Like I'm between weed and comedy, that's what I make my living off of.
Now, you also said in an interview that get to know the weed plant and keep it original.
Yeah.
If you want to get into the business.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
People always get to know
the plant.
Yeah. For me, I just see a lot of people who are getting into the industry. I mean, everyone has their intentions of getting into weed. But I just think that you need to really... I don't like seeing people who get into the industry and don't have a relationship with the plant, because for me it's a medicine. I feel like it's like you're taking advantage of something and of people who, you know, this is a medicine. This is something that's special to us. It's healing, and it's becoming so corporate. And that's the side of it that, like, when we voted for legalization, that a lot of people warned us about, that this is what it would turn into. And, you know, over time, I think things will change. But you're seeing so many different kinds of people trying to get into the industry. And I get asked this question a lot of, like, how do I get in? What's the best way? Because
you've been smoking for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying?
Now you listen to Bob Marley.
Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, you got a weed t-shirt. That's what I saw in the very beginning. I saw a lot of fakes, faking the funk.
Well, and so for me, it's just like, well, you know, one, get to know the plant. From an authentic standpoint, find why you love this plant. What is it that attracts you to the plant? And then for me, be original. Like, whatever you're doing, whatever you're producing, whatever you're putting out there, whether it's marketing or you're trying to do a brand or you're trying to do a grow, like, be original, be authentic. Like, find a way to add, not take away from whatever is out there, I guess.
You know, you brought a blunt.
I did.
And we smoked it before the show.
Yes.
If this was 3 years ago right now, we'd be on our 50th bong hit.
Yeah.
2,000 edibles.
Yeah.
I had to cut that out for two reasons. Number one, I listened to the podcast and we were putting out shitty content because we were stoned 80%
Fair
of
enough.
The time. And the other problem was that I was attracting the wrong...
Kind of audience?
Audience.
Okay.
I didn't want the audience. I didn't want to ever lie to the audience. I smoke, you know, a fucking eighth every 2 days of 25% and over THC.
Okay.
And I have a bong. I do this one bong at a time.
Okay, wow.
I wake up to three before I go lift, three when I come back.
Amazing.
Two at one, three before I got to pick up my
daughter. I smoke an eighth in an hour.
Do you really?
I mean, I can go through an eighth in less than a day.
Yeah, I could do them in a day. The bong slows me down.
Yeah, I should probably do that more.
The bong... I do the bong because it's a bigger hit. I get the more from my bang.
Yeah.
When I smoke, now, number two, I can't smoke the same weed every day.
Yeah.
So when I go to the weed store, I got to buy four weeds.
Indica, what, daytime weed and nighttime weed?
I'm an indica guy.
Okay, for sure.
If it's a hybrid.
OG?
If it's a hybrid that's indica dominated.
Okay, me too.
And the percentages, I'll go with that. Sativas just do not work on me. There's maybe one or two sativas that put me in a different state, but the rest of them don't do dick to me.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm an indica, dominant okay, indica now, person.
In one of your interviews or one of your YouTube videos, I saw that you had ADHD and then you were bipolar when you were 12, you know. Between you and me, I don't know what half that shit is.
Yeah.
I don't want to fucking know.
Yeah.
But I do know that I had the same thing. I just knew from the first time I smoked weed, not alcohol, not snorting coke, not eating pills, none of that shit. As far as weed concerned, something happened to me.
Yeah.
If you notice, I'm not a big weed in a group type of guy.
Right.
You won't see me at weed functions.
Yeah.
I'm not. That's not my bag. For me, I do it like the fucking Indians. It's a... it's a...
A ritual.
It's a ritual.
Yeah.
You know, whether
it's
a ritual for me, a personal ritual.
Yeah.
I can't lie to you, and a lot of people are going to hate on me for this. I don't give a fuck if it's illegal or not. Okay? It's a ritual for me.
Yeah.
I like ripping the paper and then gluing it together and letting it dry. And while it dries, I'm breaking up my butt and I'm listening to a music. And then I put it together. Like, I'll roll two joints and put them in a thing and go to, when I'm on the road, and I'll smoke one before the first show and before the second show. I really don't want to smoke with nobody.
Yeah.
It's my own personal little ritual.
Totally.
You know, if I know that you're going to be there, I'll bring seven joints.
Aww.
So I could give you one, your own joint, in case you blew a fucking terrorist last night.
Yeah.
Now I don't have to have terrorist germs in my lung and Agent Orange. You know what I'm saying? When I was a kid, I would get sick when I smoked in circles.
Oh, wow.
I would get really sick or whatever. So for me... For me, it was not about, I think that when this weed thing, and you and I both know this, we won't mention no names, I think a lot of people got on the weed boat to sell tickets and to make people think they were cool or whatever. It ain't a way to a guy like me.
Yeah.
Because like you, I've been hitting this since I was 12.
Right.
And I think for even, when I think of comedy, when I think of the comedic mind, and I think of a drug. There's no better drug.
Yeah.
You know, this morning when I got back from acupuncture, I had a fucking write. Before I came, I had to write a little bit. I did four or five bong hits.
Yeah.
I loosened the wing. Can of the dry ginger ale
it's
diet.
The best.
And I put it, I leave my cell phone in the other room. I go on the living room because I didn't have a chance to go get caught. You know, I had to do it there. And it's all part of my ritual.
I love that.
If I could, I don't like smoking while I write. I like to smoke, leave the bong in the other room,
and then I write,
and then get up an hour later and go refuel
again.
That's a discipline. Mm-hmm. Get up, move around, and go smoke again in another room.
The common thing that I hear from people about writing high is that it'll seem funny in the moment, but then it actually isn't. Have you guys trained yourself to write high, or do you find the same thing?
It's not about writing funny in that. It's about relaxing you.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the Stephen King book on writing, it's not about writing a whole page. It's about sitting there for an hour.
Okay.
It's about you.
I'm going to have to read that book.
Getting up, going somewhere, sitting there facing the sun or against the sun. If you read his book,
yeah.
he sits a certain way towards the sun.
Huh.
Steven Spielberg, Stephen King, the prince of fucking darkness.
Yeah.
The guy who wrote Cujo has to sit a certain way in a room facing the sun. And he plays music while he writes. And he locks the door so nobody can come in. I don't like my wife coming in the room when I'm fucking writing. Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, wow.
That's why I go to a coffee shop and I sit in the same place at the coffee shop so nobody can come up behind me.
Wow.
You know, I like all these little...
Rituals.
Rituals. But
yeah.
Marijuana for me has always been a ritual. You know, I get up, I drink coffee, I pop a nicotine gum, I brush my teeth. Then I hit that pipe of death. About 40 minutes in, by fucking 8 o'clock, I'm starving. Now I can eat my two eggs and bacon. What time do you hit when you wake up?
I mean, honestly, every day is different. I wake and bake pretty much every single day.
Every day.
Different ways. I've been on blunts lately, which is probably not the healthiest, but I just love that little bit of tobacco.
I like it from time to time.
I love it. Blunt and a coffee. I go and I work out. Sometimes I'll wait to smoke until after I work out because I like to think of it as a reward. You know, it's my wind down. And definitely when I'm writing and even like on before I get up on stage, like Felipe, when, you know, we're chiefing right until the moment we get walk on stage, and I had some of my best sets, you know, high as fuck. And like, so I'm just calm where I can like be myself, and like some stuff, like maybe a joke will just come out and I'll write it on stage or something.
For me, the reefer removes the safety net.
Yeah.
I'm fucking Johnny Wallenda. You want to be Johnny Wallenda? This is your chance to be Johnny Wallenda. Smoke this. This is another discipline.
Yeah.
Focus and go on stage, deliver. The audience will read that you're high.
Yeah.
And they give you brownie points. They give you points. So there's a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're drinking, you don't get that learning curve.
That's true.
When you're smoking, you get that little curve from the audience. And if you are funny and they know you're stoned and you start giggling, they're taking a ride with you.
Yeah.
You suck them into your fucking nightmare. Right. You suck them into your
nightmare. It's true.
You know, you really did. I don't do edibles before stage no more. But I will smoke pot like a motherfucker. Yeah. Because, like I told my wife the other day, I go, this is why I don't like the word sobriety. Because you're always living on a fucking, I can't.
Yeah. It's like the opposite of improv.
Marijuana keeps me knowing that I'm dirty.
Yeah.
There is something wrong.
Or real.
You know, I've always dreamt of giving up coke and alcohol and pills and all that shit. Marijuana, it's never even crossed my fucking mind. Like, I will smoke till they bury me unless I lose a lung or an eyeball.
Yeah.
Or
I'm the same way.
Something.
Was it hard for you in New York, or did you be able to bring enough for the entire month?
You can find weed in New York.
I brought fucking 2 pounds of weed with me back there. When I was there for the 3 weeks,
yeah,
I had 8 different types of weed.
Oh, hell yeah. You just put it in your bag?
Yeah.
They don't care anymore.
28 ounces. I brought two of them. I bring a gym bag, and you dip it in the boxing glove.
Oh, shit.
You know what I'm saying? So now you have 2 bags. So if they lose one, you got weed in one of them. Yeah. I'm going to lose both of them.
Yeah.
Plus my steep apnea bag has something.
You put them all in different places.
Yeah. I don't vape. That don't work no more.
I was going to
bring you a bag of vapes, and I go,
oh, I still would have taken them and smoked them just because you gave them to me.
No, but they don't. The vapes do something to me. The first two of them, and then I'm spitting up the next couple days.
Yeah. I'm not a fan.
Where do you see marijuana going in the future? Do you see TV shows? Oh. I mean, I've watched Bon Appetit and all those.
Mm-hmm.
Not the best.
I mean, I saw a bus today that the whole wrap of the bus was a CBD advertisement. So it's going mainstream. Like, it's going to be huge. I think there's going to be maybe even a weed channel. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a TV network, or if it all just went online. It's really just when mainstream advertising and the people like that are willing to put their dollars behind, you know, cannabis content on a mainstream level. Like, it's like Coke or like Pepsi is going to be the first one to like back or sponsor something like that. We're really just kind of waiting. And I think, honestly, if it goes federal, that's when we'll really start to see it on a different level, you know, all over the place.
It's pretty, I don't know if we're both friends with them on Facebook, but yesterday someone posted a picture that some CBD company had, like, the time, you know how Times Square, look, they'll have like 8 different advertisements from the same company. It was a CBD company.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty cool.
It's the future. It's everywhere. It's in our Walgreens. They're selling CBD at Sephora. It's, my friend has a, Kush Queen is at Urban Outfitters now. It's a CBD THC bath bombs. I'll bring you some for you or your wife if you guys take baths.
Joey's a big
and for you, Lee,
I'm a shower guy.
Okay, but
I'm not allowed to.
I'm gonna sit in the I'll bring you some. Soak in the same dirt.
I don't know. Maybe your wife. Maybe your. I don't know what you.
Women
and,
like
you
that and, shit. Yeah, they make believe. Like, oh, it's so
it's romantic. It
gives a fuck. I take a bath. I whack off. I gotta go.
Hell yeah.
Once I see that egg yolk floating in the fucking bubble.
So why don't you just wait to jerk off?
Because everybody wants to jerk off underwater.
You know there you right? go. Where well, let me just let you, yeah, it'll be nice with a bath bomb.
Where do you see your career going in the next 6 months?
In the next 6 months? Ooh, I'm...
What do you want to do in the next 6 months?
Just continue to hustle, writing. I signed an NDA for some stuff that I'm pretty excited for. So I have some things. I shot my first pilot a couple weeks ago.
What did
so,
you shoot the pilot for?
It was for a E-comedy... For E, and it was a game show that had all female comics on it that was about pop culture called Material Girls. So I'm starting to like, I'm open. My plans are to learn and to grow and to just be funnier than the day before. And that's like, I'm open.
You taking acting classes?
I'm at Second City.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So you're really making this work.
Oh, this is my life. This is what I'm doing.
You have a roommate?
Nope. I live alone.
Good.
My ex-boyfriend, I used to live with one of my boyfriends, but I no longer live with them.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you stay single for a while. Because it seems you like the kiss of death.
Oh, man.
Yourself. I mean, you're funny and you're going. You know what? Right now, you're funny and you're going places where I add that extra stress.
I mean, I'm never looking for that. I know what I want out of this life. I want to stand up is my main love. Stand up is my, like, I'm married to stand up, you know? And that's what I'm going to be doing to the day I can't walk anymore on stage. And then I'll roll myself. But, you know, I don't like to plan my life. Like, I hope for the best. You know, I just focus on what's right in front of me.
How can people find you?
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Wolfie Comedy. And if they like weed humor or weed content, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Wolfie Memes. And then my podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Spotify, Chronic Relief with Rachel Wolfson. And I'd love to have you both on.
Where's your, what's the website where they can get your dates and whatnot?
I don't really post dates on a website because I'm just, you know, lazy when it comes to that. But I do post my dates and my shows on my Instagram. I just think that's where a lot of my people follow me.
And you have an agent and everything?
Nope. Yeah. I have a publicist.
Do you really?
Yeah. I recently, publicist wanted to be my publicist. So that's what I'm saying. I have a lot of good things. I'm in a good place. You know, life is happening and I'm just riding the wave.
Well, I've been watching you for about 9 months and, I could tell you're a hustler.
Thank you.
You're not looking for any handouts.
No, never.
Felipe speaks very highly of you.
I'm honored.
Everybody that I've met has spoken very. They've asked me if I've known you, and I told them no. But this is the first time. It's great to meet you.
Thank you.
You're prettier in person than you are on your photographs.
Thank
you. You're always welcome on the show.
I love you guys. Thank you so much. Whatever the fuck
you. So where can they find you, little stony ass?
Oh yeah, at Wolfie Comedy. That's where they can find me.
Well, and I just started calling you Wolfie.
I love it.
I love your name.
I love
and
it.
And you look like a Wolfie, so
thank
it's
you.
Tremendous. So yeah, anytime you want to come
thank
on,
you.
You're always family.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to thank you motherfuckers for always supporting us. Do not forget, the only date I got is the Lincoln motherfucking Theater in D.C. August 9th. Tickets are moving. I'm sorry. The Borgata is sold out, and I can't add
is it
a
really?
Sixth. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
It's been sold out since May.
Oh, that's
May
dope.
Because my family's going, and I can't add a second show. But we just put tickets up at the Stress Factory for October, so knock yourself out. You want to go to New Brunswick, I'll see you cocksuckers there. Besides that, I want to talk to you guys real quick, and then you go on and enjoy your fucking weekend, all right? Number one, listen, we wouldn't be a podcast without you guys, but we also wouldn't be a podcast without our sponsors, and I want to welcome ExpressVPN to the show, because when they approached me, I read their information, and I think this is just tremendous, because internet privacy is fucking dead. It's mort, and that's the reason why I use ExpressVPN. It runs in the background of your computer or your phone, and then you can use the internet just like you normally would. You download the app, you click to connect, and Viola, you're protected, all right? The features, you're totally anonymous, there's no location tracking, and it shields your identity. And to me, that means the fucking world. And how do you get it? Here it is, nice and easy. You download the ExpressVPN app on your computer or your phone, you push one button, and boom, Viola, you're protected. It's less than $7 a month, and you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. I don't give you nothing unless you got a guarantee. So everybody feels good, all right? Everybody feels good when you hear it on the Church of What's Happening Now. So listen, find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com /church. That's CHURCH. And that's ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/church for 3 months free when you buy a 1 year package. It's that simple. Visit ExpressVPN.com/church to learn more and take back your privacy. Visit ExpressVPN.com/church. Be protected, be safe, be confident, and take back your privacy. That's ExpressVPN.com/church. Listen, I told you once, I told you a million fucking times about CBD oil. It's like getting ginseng 20 years ago. Remember, you could buy a crack pipe next to ginseng. How healthy is that fucking ginseng? I'm sure when that fucking Tibetan monk invented ginseng, he wanted it marketed next to a fucking crack pipe with a rose in it. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Because picking a reliable CBD is like fucking pulling teeth. It's like meeting a woman with like chlamydia on Sunset. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to happen. Lucky for you motherfuckers, I got you into CBD line. And if you see people on Twitter, hit me back. These guys don't mess around. They make CBD products from start to finish. And they got you covered. Whether you want to smoke a vape, whether you want to do cartridges, whether you want to do the shatter. Oh, you're not into smoking? Forget about it. They got a gummy bear. They got a raspberry gummy bear. That'll make your asshole hairs pop up as you're eating them. You understand me? If you have that hemorrhoid, pop
take
goes
seven.
The, pop goes the weasel. All right? And I do the tincture. You put it under your tongue an hour before you go to bed at night, forget about it. And especially if you do two of them, you'll sleep like a fucking zombo. Their products are clean, Bobby. And they're not like these fucking fakes you see at liquor stores and shoe stores and shit like this. What I want you to do first, just to see I'm not fucking around, go to CBDLion.com. Check out their third-party lab results yourself. If you don't fucking like what you see, you take a hike. But I guarantee you're going to like what you see. And like I told you, they make their products from beginning to end. So what I'm going to do for you today, I'm saving your fucking life. CBDLion.com. Pick something, go to the box, click in church at checkout. Get 20% off.
Bam.
Joey, really? Yeah, I'm telling you, you get 20% off, you little miserable fuck. Go to CBDLion.com, put some happiness in your life. Try the tincture. Smoke the vape. Whatever you want to do, they got you covered. You're gonna, even my wife's smoking the fucking vape. She found in the book, and when you go on the website, they have what ailments you have and what vape you should smoke. And she's been smoking, like, I don't know, Purple Haze or something like that. You know me, though. I don't know what I did this morning. But do me a favor. Just go to CBDLion.com, get the party started, and get 20% off. All right, check out, all right? I want to thank CBDLion.com. I want to thank ExpressVPN. I also want to thank ZipRecruiter and Onnit for having our back this week and always having our backs. But most importantly, I want to thank you motherfucking savages. Go to joeydiaz.net for tour dates. But right now, let's just focus on the Lincoln fucking Theater in D.C. I'm not coming to Baltimore, so you cocksuckers, take the ride, bitch. I'll see you guys Monday morning, ready to rock, tip-top Magoo. I love you guys. Stay black. Lee, kick this motherfucking mule.
Lord.